Money FM 89.3, best of prime time. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Good afternoon, I'm Chua Tian Tian with your Market View. Now today, we want to talk about the key macroeconomic developments rather within Asia, and a bulk of them coming out of Greater China. Yesterday, we saw Chinese factory activity expanding at a slower pace in June, with the Taixin China General Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index standing at 50.4, down from the 51.7 points 1 month ago. And in Hong Kong, economists are expecting the city to report a contraction in GDP in the second quarter of this year, or rather, they have reported a contraction in GDP for the second quarter of this year, with economic headwinds clouding the outlook for the financial hub. So how should we read into these numbers, and what are the implications of these developments? For more, I'm joined by John Chu, Chief Economist Asia of Swiss Re. Hi, John.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to have you on our show as well. John, maybe let's start with the Greater China region. Hong Kong reporting a contraction in Q2, and China's factory activity contracted unexpectedly in July. To what extent are these developments within market expectations?
I think for Hong Kong, first of all, that was below market expectations. Mm-hmm. And the disappointment probably came from the slightly weaker than expected consumption rebound. So if you remember, there were still some COVID restrictions, a wave of COVID in Hong Kong at the start of the year. Those restrictions were lifted around April time. There was a slight boost to consumption, people going back to shops, back to restaurants. But it seems like that's not enough to offset the weakness from external demand in particular. I think that external demand is also a factor for the China factory activity as well. Overall, it just seems like globally, demand is becoming more and more scarce. You have the US economy slowing, Europe slowing, both for different reasons, but overall, slowing global economic growth is undoubtedly one of the reasons why the figures have perhaps disappointed market expectations recently.
So with those numbers, how would that affect Hong Kong's attractiveness as a key financial hub? And also, what is your growth outlook for the Greater China region for the rest of this year?
I think in terms of attractiveness as a financial hub, that does not necessarily depend on growth numbers or even the sort of near-term economic figures. Those must depend on many structural factors like, you know, how good is the governance? Does it have a proper and sound legal and regulatory regime, and one that investors have confidence in? There are other factors as well, like how strong is the labor force, the skills that you need to be a financial hub, the links to capital, stock of capital that's already there, and also other things like infrastructure, technology, and so on. And all of those are not, to be honest, affected by one or two quarters of data, either good or bad.
But China's commitment to its COVID zero policy, does it show anything to investors this point about putting their money into Hong Kong and the uncertainties that ensues?
So far, we're still seeing Hong Kong actually in terms of different sectors of the economy. Finance and insurance may be actually holding up relatively well. So you have to remember that some of the sectors that maybe have not recovered so strongly would be ones like retail, for example, where because there's still a lack of tourists and travellers, the demand simply hasn't returned to Hong Kong. Whereas other sectors like, again, some of the services sectors, some of the sectors where you don't rely on, you know, people being physically here necessarily, you can do remotely, those have actually done relatively better.
And I do want to find out what's your growth outlook for the Greater China region for the rest of this year, John.
Yeah, sure. So for mainland China, we're expecting GDP growth of 4.2%. A lot of that, I think, will depend on the stimulus that we expect to come in the second half of the year. So continued policy support. As for Hong Kong, that's going to be lower. So we only have penciled in 0.5%. Growth, so just, you know, only slightly above zero for 2022.
And I do want to touch a little bit about the global developments, because the US Fed just hiked interest rates by another 75 basis points. Markets are reading this very differently. Some were thinking that the Fed remains committed to fighting inflation with sort of a supersized rate hike. Others were saying that the Fed's post-event comment indicated that they are willing to slow the pace of rate hikes going forward this year. Where do you think the Fed is going?
So the end point, I think, is important. So we think the Fed is not there yet. We expect the Fed to raise the Fed funds rate to the range of 3.5 to 3.75%. Now, they've already front-loaded a lot of that, it's true, but you still have inflation at over 9%, which is way above the Fed's target. And that we expect actually to be maybe more sticky than perhaps some others are expecting. So we believe the Fed actually is, as you say, committed to fighting inflation above all. And we don't think that's going to change, and they will remain in a hiking mode. Now, whether it comes as another 75 or another 50 or another 25 is maybe not necessarily as important as where they're going to end up, which is significantly higher than the estimates of the neutral interest rate, which is maybe around 2.5%. So we still think they need to tighten further.
And so, John, given your projections on how the Fed is going to move and also the current geopolitical macroeconomic backdrop, what is your growth expectation for the whole of Asia, at least for the rest of this year?
So for Asia, it will most likely be slower due to, especially in maybe Q4, when a lot of demand, again, may not be there with the US. It's in technical recession right now, but the more recent surveys and also consumer confidence point to further slowdown. Second, you have Europe, which is facing a very different set of issues linked to potential very disruptions to energy supply that could have quite a big impact on GDP, but it's pretty hard to quantify. But overall, with those two, very large economic regions likely to slow, it seems unlikely that Asia is going to be completely immune. But what I would say is that, at least relative to other regions, Asia overall growth numbers should still be faster than Europe or the US, partly because the recovery just isn't as complete. So Asia had, especially a lot of emerging Asia, opened relatively later than the US and Europe. So they're just at an earlier stage of the economic cycle, and there will still be some growth momentum left.
If you're just tuning in, we are now speaking to John Zhu, Chief Economist Asia of Swiss Re. John, in Asia, in the meantime, which are the specific markets that we should be looking out for?
I think inflation is something that still concerns us. And the markets that would be perhaps something to keep an eye on would be ones where inflation is still rising or is high and already. And second, where the interest rates are still relatively low. So maybe where central banks have not normalized quite as quickly. And may feel that with inflation accelerating, they need to act much more forcefully to bring inflation and inflation expectations back under control. So one potential candidate to watch out for is potentially Thailand, where inflation has been rising and rising steadily, and where the Bank of Thailand has so far kept policy relatively loose. We suspect in the second half of the year they will start to tighten, but it's one where, on balance, compared to other Asian economies that had perhaps lifted interest rates earlier or had been hiking interest rates a bit faster, they may have then more room to pause, so to speak, and see how the data goes.
And in the meantime, Asian economies, they continue to see commodity price shocks, climate change, supply chain disruptions, creating major developmental challenges, rising income inequality. John, how concerned should we be rather at this point?
It really depends on the economy, because Asia is so diverse. So actually for some Asian economies, if you consider Australia, New Zealand, actually they have had terms of trade benefits. Or boost, if you like, from a lot of the commodities that they export have gone up in price. So that helps with their growth. Whereas for some emerging Asian economies, especially the slightly poorer ones where a lot of the commodities that they buy, like food, like oil and gas, also form a large part of consumers' overall spending, then those actually may be at the greater risk of not just, in terms of trade shock, having, suddenly a larger import bill, but also having populations that are at more risk of perhaps falling into poverty, because the things that are going up in price, like food and petrol, are not things that most people can go without. And so you have to spend on these things. And that's why, the combination of already, high inequality or a very low income segments of the population faced with rising prices of staples is a rather worrying mix.
And I do want to touch on Swiss Re as well, John. How are insurers like Swiss Re managing those risks, positioning its investments in the meantime?
So I would say for insurers, and this is a generalization, of course, but many insurers hold mainly fixed income investments in their portfolio. And the other thing that they do is a lot of asset and liability matching. But potentially, in the short run, there may be some mark-to-market losses due to the very rapid rise in interest rates globally. So that may be something to manage, watch out for. But overall, actually, we think in the medium to long term, rising interest rates is actually good news for the insurance industry. Insurers, I think, will benefit from higher yields. That's overall going to be preferable to the previous, I guess, over a decade of very low or even negative yielding bonds. So on the whole, short term, some headwinds, yes, but high rates is actually positive for the insurance industry in the medium to long run.
And John, I thought I'd better pose you this question. Since Swiss Re is in the insurance business, what does the ongoing uncertainty mean for the demand for insurance in the Asian region?
The uncertainty obviously is higher and more elevated than what we're used to. Now, that doesn't necessarily translate into more or less demand. I would say, actually, it's something that will increase, obviously, risk awareness, and that may have a slight positive impact. People, not just because of recent sort of uncertainty this year, but also the legacy of the pandemic, which, of course, isn't over. But those may be reasons why people, just become slightly more aware of the risks around them, and that may boost demand. On the other hand, you have to remember what's causing all this uncertainty and the impact of the uncertainty would, probably lead to slower growth, slower investments potentially in certain sectors. And slow growth overall is not necessarily a positive for insurance demand. So it's hard to, say whether, greater uncertainty is net positive.
Thank you very much, Mr. Zhu. As usual, time has caught up with us. That was John Zhu, Chief Economist Asia of Swiss Re.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.